This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio. 45% of Americans believe UFOs exist and have visited Earth. Are you one of them? There have been plenty of excitement among believers this year, naming 2020 the Summer of Flying Saucers, with more than 1,200 North American sightings reported in July and August of this year. The surge in attention is reaching official channels as well. The Navy is releasing mysterious flight videos, and the Pentagon has established a new task force for unidentified aerial phenomena. And yet, those pushing for government transparency and scientific inquiry often face ridicule for that fervor. How can a belief held by nearly half of Americans be so marginalized? And while most literature focuses on proving or disproving sightings, a new book offers a third path for explaining the unexplainable. Intimate Alien, The Hidden Story of UFOs, is a book by David Halperin, who is a professor emeritus of religious studies at UNC Chapel Hill. Welcome back to the State of Things, David.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Frank.
It's good to have you. This book really doesn't look sort of at whether or not they're real or they happened, UFOs. Mostly you're looking at why it is we report them, if particularly for those that may not have been from other places. So what's your objective in this book?
Okay, my objective is to understand what UFOs mean for us as individuals and as a culture. I think they're important to us. I also think they do not exist physically. So that I need to explain what their pull is on us and why some people have encounters with them.
Now, you could argue that the reason they have encounters with them is because they're here. There's aliens in my cornfield, David, and that's so it's not a myth.
Well, but there's tremendous problems with that. I mean, UFOs have been part of our cultural atmosphere now for 73 years. They started out in 1947. Now, if we were really being visited from outer space, surely we would expect that fact to have had some impact on our lives by this time. And indeed, the advocates for UFOs have often made predictions that soon, within a year, 2 years, we're going to have mass landings, or the government is going to reveal what it knows. These predictions always turn out to be wrong. Those who are skeptics about UFOs say, okay, well, they're nonsense, and we've shown they're nonsense. So they're going to fade. People will lose interest in them. Well, as you yourself have said, that has not happened at all.
So that's where your book really digs in. Why is it that we keep seeing these things, even though the evidence doesn't necessarily, or certainly has never demonstrated conclusively, that they're here, and yet, in the absence of that kind of proof, we keep seeing them? You say this goes back to myth and a fundamental need to have this kind of thing in our culture. Talk about that and where that comes from.
Well, when I say myth, I don't mean what people usually mean by the word, which is bunk or nonsense. I mean a kind of collective dream of our culture and possibly of our species that comes from deep within us, that comes bearing meanings that perhaps we don't recognize, but is important to us. And in this sense, I think UFOs are real, that they are, as I like to call them, visitors not from outer space, but from inner space. And they bring to our attention things that we might not want to look at.
What do you think that is? What do you think they're trying to tell us, or those visions are trying to tell us that we would rather not admit or acknowledge?
Okay, I think they have a lot of different meanings. But the one that seems to me most central is death. That they convey to us what we all know, but we really don't know. And that is that we are mortal. This is why it seems to me that the most familiar of all the UFO stories, the one that rings a bell for pretty much everybody in this culture, is Roswell, New Mexico, which is fundamentally about death. Skyriding aliens who seem like gods, and yet they fall from the sky, they're shattered, they're killed, and they're revealed to be helpless children, which is pretty much what we all are in the face of death.
You are a religious scholar, and you're talking in this book about the deep meaning of myth, that is, the kinds of stories that animate any culture that it reaches back to find some deeper meaning. And as a religious scholar with a focus on Judaic traditions, I wonder how people sort of manifest these feelings, these fears, because the fear of death obviously has been with us as humans for a long, long time, and it predates the kind of technology that gets reported with UFOs. How long has this idea been with us, and how is it? What is it about UFOs? What does that tell us about where we are today, and how could you compare that with ancient cultures that may have had different ways of manifesting these fears?
I think we are... stance on death has to be somewhat different now from what it was even 100 years ago. Because now not only is your death and my death inevitable, but the death of the whole species collectively is now a possibility. When UFOs first burst into our national consciousness, was in June of 1947. And I don't think it's coincidence that that was the same month that the doomsday clock first appeared on the cover of the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. We were starting to swallow the reality that our mass extinction as a species is a possibility, that the end of the world is not the way our ancestors imagined it, as the intervention of a just and benevolent God to set things right and make all things new, but an extinction not only of us, but of God as well. And I think that is the deep meaning of the Roswell story, and why we keep coming back to it, why we cannot discard the idea that a spaceship crashed in the New Mexico desert with its pilots shattered and dead inside it.
And this storytelling, I think, the kind of story we build around whatever explainable or as yet unexplained phenomena caused us to think we saw something up there, right? I mean, you can see something. It could be Venus. It could be a comet, or, you know, it could be a UFO. It could be something still unidentified. But the storytelling is what's interesting, how we fill in the details.
Yeah, I mean, so about 10 years ago, I talked to a librarian from the western part of North Carolina. She was in her 50s, although she seemed much younger. She was a very intelligent, very articulate woman. And she told me about the UFO aliens that she used to see on her lawn when she was a child looking out through her window. And she said, "I know they weren't really there, but I did see them." Hmm. Now, I believe both parts of her statement. No, they weren't there. Yes, she saw them.
Another way that this kind of idea, this sort of vivid imagination and the closure, the filling in the gaps, is manifested, you point out that sometimes the phenomena that we've explained, the explained phenomena, can tell us more about this storytelling than others, because even when we know what it was, people have details that don't match what was recorded scientifically, right?
Absolutely. I mean, in my book, I tell the story of John Lennon, the ex-Beatle, and May Pang, his assistant and for a time his girlfriend, with whom he was living when he had his experience. It was in August of 1974, and they were living in a Manhattan penthouse, And they went out to the balcony, and they saw a disc passing, they thought, about 100 feet from them. They got a camera, took photos. The photos turned out blank, so clearly there was nothing actually in the sky. And yet they believed that they were experiencing it, and they stressed in telling the story that they were naked at the time. If you watch interviews with Lennon, with May Pang, again and again they say, mind you, we were naked. And the question that I ask is, when was the last time that a naked human couple confronted a numinous entity? And of course the answer comes to you, the Garden of Eden in Genesis. So I think we're dealing with some, I would almost say, universal religious experience that was deeply embedded in these people and that came out that August night, possibly provoked by some external stimulus. I don't know what it was, possibly a Goodyear blimp. And to tell you the truth, I don't care too much what it was. What really interests me is that unconsciously they're reenacting the experience of Adam and Eve, but with a UFO in the place of the human-like God of Genesis.
Let's talk about the ways in which the icons, which the manifestations, either stay the same over time or change. I mean, the idea of the alien, you know, with the inverted teardrop and the almond eyes is relatively recent as a you know, sort of the picture of the alien. But you say the idea of the men in black goes back centuries. So here's something that gets carried over centuries while other images tend to be kind of new. First of all, tell us about the man in black. I didn't realize how far back that went.
Yeah, well, it's a paradox that I keep running into when I study UFOs, and that is that a mythic theme is something that is, we can pinpoint its origins. In this case, the Men in Black go back to 1953, when a Connecticut researcher named Albert Bender believed that he was visited by three Men in Black who forced him to conceal what he knew about UFOs. And yet at the same time, along with their history, they have a prehistory. In the 17th century, the man in black was a standard feature of witch trials, that an eccentric Jewish theologian in 1683 encountered three men in black who visited him in his bedroom and tried to seduce him into heresy. This seems to be something that is deeply wired into the human mind and yet emerges in a modern form at a specific time.
Well, let's talk more about those specific ways and specific trauma, perhaps, and specific experiences, because the dominant UFO culture seems to be mostly white, but there is a distinct African-American tradition that correlates to the collective trauma of slavery and Jim Crow. Talk more about that and how that looks different.
Okay, well, it's kind of curious because there is a distinct African-American tradition. Normally, African-Americans do not experience or have not experienced abduction as the traumatic event that Caucasians have experienced it. And yet we can trace the beginnings of the abduction tradition to 1964, when Barney Hill, who was a African-American man married to a white woman, had an experience together with his wife in which it seems to me that he's recapitulating what his ancestors went through, abducted into slavery. And I think that's where the whole experience, I won't even say idea, the whole experience of abduction starts in our culture. And yet there are elements of that too that seem to go back to antiquity. Saint Paul speaks of himself as experiencing an abduction into the third heaven. So I think there is something, again, I would say hardwired into us, that manifests itself in modern dress in the alien abductions.
Do you think now, because while we were, you know, sort of had three networks and everybody was consuming largely the same media, it was very difficult for people to come out and talk about their experiences this way. Now that everybody's got their own silos, do you expect a proliferation, more people talking about this thing and this myth, you know, sort of becoming more more widely expressed?
Well, I think we're seeing it right now, that not only is there a rise in UFO sightings, I mean, there was a tremendous rash in April in Belgium of UFO sightings. They turned out to be Starlink satellites put up by Elon Musk. But the essential point for me is that they were perceived and experienced and reported as UFOs, but that everywhere you turn, you find them in the media. The New York Times, which never used to touch UFOs, regarded them all as ridiculous. Now it runs articles on Pentagon UFO programs, and it was the New York Times that originally revealed these strange videos taken by Navy pilots, which I think are explainable in mundane terms. But what for me is important is the way that the New York Times and other media have dwelt on them.
David Halperin is the author of Intimate Alien, The Hidden Story of the UFO. Going to be the 1 year, there'll be a 1 year anniversary event in March of 2021 at Flyleaf Books. David, thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Frank.
You can find out more about the book and our show at our website, stateofthings.org.